Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it's been said by a lot of people lately, it's been said, I believe, in a Crossroads GPS ad, and many Republicans, that the reason the president can only talk about Mitt Romney, Bain Capital, Swiss bank accounts, fill in the blank, is because Obama has nothing to run on. But that's not true. The president said, in fact, just earlier this week at a speech out in Oakland, the reason we can't elect Mitt Romney is because all of his economic ideas is exactly what we tried in the past decade, and that's what got us into this mess. On the other hand,
just like we've tried their plan, we've tried our plan, and it worked. That's the difference. That's the choice in this election. That's why I'm running for a second term.
So how is that plan working out? He says it worked, which means that the job has been accomplished, you would think, by the past tense there. But let's see what his own Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner said just yesterday on Capitol Hill.
The economy is not growing fast enough. Unemployment is very high. Huge amount of damage left in the housing market. Americans are still living with the scars of this crisis.
Now, by referring back to the crisis, of course, that's Geithner's way of saying, yes, it's terrible, but it's not our fault. That's a far cry from we tried our plan and it worked.
I'd hate to see failure, wouldn't you, Greg?
Absolutely.
You know? Look, it's great news for Republicans that Obama is finally running on his record, because the record includes not just the unemployment, you know, another 8 million people working part-time who want full-time work, a record number of Americans not in the labor force, $5 trillion in new debt, the downrating of the U.S. credit rating. We're not a AAA country anymore, although Obama says we'll always be AAA in his heart. food stamp use, the poverty level, by every major economic indicator, America is in very rough shape. But we have not come back from the problems of late 2008. And we have basically stagnated for several years. And Obama wants to say, we tried our plan and it worked. Stan Greenberg and other Democratic pollsters say that when they try this variations of this line, i.e. the economy has recovered, et cetera, in focus groups, they've lost several focus group managers that way, as the focus group rises up in rage and takes it out on the this does not persuade people who are down on Obama. And so you're going to hear a lot of the plan worked in Romney ads and RNC ads and 527 group ads and super PAC ads and all kinds of stuff between now and November. I think you put three statements together, Greg. The private sector is working fine, or is doing fine. You didn't build that, and we tried our plan and it worked. And that is basically almost the haiku of the Obama message for 2012. And I think the Romney campaign will be doing everything they can to spite the president seeming phenomenally out of touch.
Not surprised if the Romney campaign jumps on that one as well. I think the only argument Obama can make, and the only reason it could possibly have any clout, is because you can't measure it, is the line he used to trot out. He doesn't use it much anymore, but he probably will again, is that just think how bad it would have been if we hadn't done what we did. And that is also a huge crowd pleaser. Yes, it's horrible, but it probably would have been worse if we hadn't done this. So
think of how much worse it would be. Yay!
All right. On to the bad martini now. And just as we saw during the primary season, every time there seemed to be good news for Mitt Romney, Romney's own campaign would kind of make sure that there was also a little bit of bad news. After he'd win a big primary, you had Mitt Romney trying to say that there was a safety net for the poor, but instead he said he's not worried about the poor. Then, after he pretty much clinched the nomination, Eric Fernstrom talked about the Etch-a-Sketch moment. Eric Fernstrom had another one talking about how the Romney mandate was not a tax, which is not what the Supreme Court said in terms of Obamacare, and so that got them into a pickle. Now we have an unnamed advisor as Romney heads to London. He's there today, met with some British officials. He's obviously there for the start of the Olympics, and we'll move on to Israel later in the week, talking about how much we have in common with the Anglo-Saxon culture. Ideally, the point is that a lot of our system of government came from what we saw in Britain from the Magna Carta on through individual rights and so forth. But of course, the big blowback is that by embracing Anglo-Saxon, that means that clearly the Romney campaign is a bunch of racists, Jim.
This is one of those things where we make a couple of assumptions in this story. One, we assume that somebody actually said it, and knowing the British press, that is not always a safe assumption. They tend to have looser standards for quotes and things like that. And the things like that. Now, the Daily Telegraph is usually pretty good about those things, but they did have to retract a story of Michelle Obama buying like $50,000 worth of lingerie. So the idea that this is not entirely on the up and up is always, you know, a possibility here. The second is that these are, you know, really genuine senior Romney advisors, and they're not talking to Irving Schmidlap, some guy who says he's affiliated with the campaign and who, you know, doesn't have any real deal. So let's assume, for the sake of argument, it's that. I don't think it's necessarily that bad a statement, but having said that, it does give the Obama campaign an excuse to say, oh, look, racism, and, you know, to try to create a big controversy here. So I think if you're an advisor, be careful about what you say, be careful about these sorts of things. And really, I mean, I guess for a lot of these conversations, is it necessary for Romney advisors to be giving these kinds of background briefings to the press? There's a possibility that, yes, everything they say will end up becoming painfully boring and generic. But the idea is, if the alternative to painfully boring and generic is to give the Obama campaign, you know, something to make a big controversy over, you know, I'm just not sure if there's really a good point to this. And just seems it's all too plausible to see a advisor thinking they're helping out Romney and then creating a big headache for him, as even the great easygoing, soft-spoken John Sununu has been known to do from time to time. So, you know, if you're a surrogate, you are fair game in this political environment, and so that means you got to be a little more careful. And that's just the way the campaign environment is. I hope the Romney campaign is up to speed on this.
Yeah, I hope so, too. But I'm guessing the response you'd get then is, now you're freezing out the press. First, you won't release 25 years' worth of tax returns.
Darned if you do, darned if you don't.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, on to the crazy martini now. Crazy martini, always number three. Chick-fil-A. They, of course, are well known as makers of tasty chicken sandwiches. They've pioneered restaurant eateries in malls. Everyone knows that the founders are devout Christians. They're not open on Sunday to allow their employees to go to church and so forth. So shock of all shocks, the son of the man who founded Chick-fil-A is interviewed and says that he supports traditional marriage, does not support gay marriage. In a subsequent interview, he once again states that same position. So there's now a huge outrage because this man has stated his opinion on an issue in a country where free speech is in the First Amendment. There are now calls for gay couples to go kiss inside Chick-fil-A's. Traditional conservatives have now demanded Honor Chick-fil-A Day, which I believe was Jim. I think this is just one of the things that infuriates conservatives, regardless of where people come down on the issue. The idea that if you somehow disagree with their position, you're the biggest bigot in the world. And I think that's probably wearing a little bit thin on people who otherwise don't get involved in the issue very much.
Whatever your perspective on gay marriage, I think you should be very wary of the state lashing out at businesses for the political views of their owners. This is not just in Chicago where Rahm Emanuel has said these sorts of things. Thomas Menino, the mayor of Boston, is doing the same sort of thing. Menino has not explicitly said, I will not let you set up in Boston because I don't like your views on this. But I think that, you know, certainly a letter he sent to the company certainly kind of implies that. And that's, you know, a direct abrogation of the First Amendment rights of the organizer of that company. It's not like they're refusing to serve chicken sandwiches to gays. It's not like they're refusing to you know, do any type of violating the rights of customers or other Bostonians. They just hold a viewpoint that Menino and Bostonians and Rahm and a lot of Chicagoans think is wrong. Now, the irony, I'm seeing over at hotair.com, you know, Louis Farrakhan lives in Chicago, and Rahm Emanuel has been, you know, warm and fuzzy towards Louis Farrakhan, despite his, you know, many anti-Semitic remarks. And, oh, by the way, Louis Farrakhan opposes gay marriage. So as long as you are a rabid anti-Semite like Farrakhan, it's okay. It's if you're a good, devout Christian, then Rahm Emanuel has a problem with this. Now, credit where it's due, over at Salon, Glenn Greenwald is a fairly principled liberal on this, and he's pointing out, look, one, this is pretty blatantly unconstitutional. Two, we don't want conservative communities trying to drive out Ben and Jerry's and stuff like that. I mean, you know, business owners have every right to hold whatever views they want. Ben and Jerry may be kumbaya type guys, but that doesn't mean I dislike their ice cream any less. You know, if you feel like boycotting a business over the views of the owner, that's fine. That's your right. But the state and city governments have absolutely no business getting into this. And I think it's a disturbing trend. I think it's insanity. The only thing I can think of is that I don't know how bad things are in Boston, but I know in Chicago they've had absolutely egregious gang violence all year long that just seems to be worsening. So I can't help but wonder if Rahm Emanuel is looking for a bright, shiny object to distract the public from the absolute failure of his fairly pro-gun control policies in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. That's usually the strategy of the Obama folks when they have something that they want to distract the public from. So wouldn't be surprised that the original chief of staff for the administration would be doing that, too, in his first and a year and a half, I guess, on the job of what is a debacle as the mayor of Chicago. So we'll see. We'll see how far this this feigned outrage goes. I'm guessing it won't last too long, but we'll find out. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.